and welcome to this week's edition of Books and Booze. We are here with Leah Ryan, the author of the Undead America series. This is Renee. I'm drinking a Black Butte Porter from Deschutes Brewery. And once again, we're being brought to you by Mr. Bad Example, and we're still doing the book giveaway, which we'll talk about more at the end of the show. Leah, how are you doing? What are you drinking tonight?
I'm good, and I totally just realized, like, the biggest fail ever is I left my drink downstairs. But that's okay.
Oh, no.
We're going to have to work through it, because here's the thing, too, is I had to have my drink early as well, because there was football practice tonight, and five-year-old football practice requires wine when you get home. I did leave my second. Oh, my God. But anyway, I digress. It's downstairs, but it was a Cabernet, which is my favorite.
Very yum.
Jessica?
I am drinking something I mentioned on the show, I think I talked about it last week. It's a Wild Blue Blueberry Lager, and it's gross.
Oh, yeah.
I had that once, and I couldn't drink it. It tasted like cough medicine.
Yeah, it's super sweet, like immediately. It's like somebody poured pancake syrup in my beer. It's bad.
Yeah.
It's the same six-pack that I was drinking the last week, if that tells you how bad it was. But I have to power through it, because what else am I going to do?
You don't want
to
waste beer.
I'm not going to waste it. And I thought, well.
My neighbor really loved it. And, like, one day she was talking it up. And she's like, you just got to try it. And, like, she brought me one from her own fridge. And so I tried to drink it. And, I mean, God, after, like, three sips, I was not pleased. But I felt compelled to finish it because she brought it to me. It was painful, like 45 minutes.
Isn't it
the worst? Like when someone gifts you a drink and it's terrible, because you're like, oh, I don't want to waste it because
you
gave it to me and you obviously like it, but God damn, it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's
bad taste. Yeah.
So. Should we just, like, jump right in?
Let's just jump right in.
Ooh, sounds exciting.
okay, so I'm going to start with what I think is the hardest question, because that's what they tell you to do in homework, right? Actually, I have to rethink this for a second, because I just realized we don't want to give any spoilers for the first book either, because there's a possibility that our listeners have, not all of our listeners have read the first book. So I don't want to do that.
No, that can't be. Clearly they have all purchased it and read it.
In a hardcover edition, or in its paperback edition.
Paperback.
I was super excited that happened.
Me too.
But
Oh my God.
In the first book.
Okay.
The climax of the story is, like, almost like a secondary apocalypse. It's contained. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm not giving anything away. So it's huge. Yeah, and it's wild and it's crazy and, like, it's kind of mind-blowing when you think of the scope of it. So when you sit down to write book two, was that kind of actively playing your mind, like, what am I going to do that's going to be at that level?
Honestly? I don't think it ever came up in my brain, but that's probably because when my brain starts, like, when I sit down and start writing, 9 times out of 10, I have no idea what I'm going to do next. And it's like I just start going to see where the story goes, and I'm sort of in that phase right now with book three. So it was book two, I got really just focused on this, like, one tiny microcosm. So it's like book one felt very sprawling, right? And I've got characters on, you know, the East Coast and in the South, and it was this just big tangle of stuff. So then when I was working on book two, I kept it really focused. Like, once I kind of got everyone where I wanted them, everything else happened in one place. And then it was funny, because I feel like every time I've written one of these books, it's been either right before or during a Walking Dead season. And I've never read the Walking Dead books, which is, I know, terrible, but there's a really specific reason that I haven't read the graphic novels themselves. But I'm a huge fan of the show, and I've stuck with it through thick and thin. And, like, so I was writing book two, and I finished it, and then all of a sudden, like, whatever season of Walking Dead, where they're all just in the farmhouse for months, and you're like, oh, my God, just get out of the damn house, happened. And I was like, oh, wow, because here I am. I kept everybody kind of in the same place throughout the same book, and I hope it didn't piss people off. But so far, feedback's been pretty positive. I don't think I'm making too many people too terribly angry.
So, actually, I have a quick – I can't remember if I asked this about the first book, but the second book is written in the same way where each chapter is told from a different person's point of view in the first person.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's kind of like, even though they're all in one place, do you write like in the order that the reader reads it, or do you write like all of Sam's and all of Jenna's and all of Michael's and all of Lola's like that? Or do you just kind of go...
In chronological. So the first book was completely different just because the first book, I originally just wrote Jenna's story, and that was my book. And I was like, hey, everybody, I wrote a book. I was so excited. And then I guess about 3 months after the point where I thought I was done, I started writing what I thought was going to be the sequel. I just started writing Sam's story. And then one day, like, Lola's story kind of popped up. Then I stopped Sam for a little while and worked on Lola. And I remember the whole time thinking, well, I'm writing the second part of the book. But then I realized I was telling kind of their origin stories. I thought,
right.
Oh, this can't be the second part of the book. This has to all be one. So that time I wrote them as three separate stories for book one. And it was actually really easy to write, but then the editing was hell. Because I had to, you know, go back and figure out. And I mean, book one does skip around in time a bit, which I wound up getting really diverse feedback about. Some people were like, oh, yeah, that's easy, no problem. I get it. I love it. Other people were like, eh, it's a little confusing. So when I sat down to write book two, I didn't want to do that again because it was really hard to get everybody in any sort of pattern that made sense. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to write chronologically. And it worked to a point. But I think about midway through, I started feeling a little schizophrenic. And so then I'm not an outliner by any stretch of the imagination. But at that point when, like, it was starting to hurt my head, honestly, I sat down and just made a list. Okay, this is going to happen in this chapter, and Jenna's going to narrate. And this is going to happen in this chapter, and Lola's going to narrate. And so, like, I kind of had this really loose list of just sort of plot points, and that helped me keep it straight. And so now I'm working on book three, and I think, I'm only probably a quarter of the way in, but I'm starting to feel a little schizophrenic. So I think and probably not through the whole rest of the book so far, but, like, I probably need to outline my next few chapters so that I can keep the voices straight, because that really helps. Otherwise, I get confused.
I wanted to, and without giving anything away, again, we're not going to spoil anybody's life, but... Since this is a series, it makes sense that there's going to be some characters that make it from book one into book two.
I know. Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, not all of those characters make it to book three.
Yeah.
You had to kill some people that we knew. How does that – because in my mind, like, I was telling Renee in the pre-show, these are people that you know now at this point. You've written them in one full book, and they're in the second book, and now – you have to kill them. Is that tough, or was it just like, well, this is what happens, or how did that feel?
I was a little sad. Again, without giving spoilers, I will say the one thing that I have vowed, and I vowed this multiple people, so I can say it here, I promise to never kill the dog.
Thank
you. I will not kill the dog, ever, because having just lost a dog, I can't do it. There's just no way in hell.
I've always
advised that... Go ahead.
I've always felt like, too, like, you're just, anytime there's a dog in a story like this, like, you're kind of just waiting for the dog to die, because you just know, like, that's a really easy way to punch the reader in their gut. So I almost feel like sometimes it takes away from the story when the dog finally does kick it, because you're like, that some of the tension you were feeling is gone.
Yeah. Can I tell you a really funny story about killing a dog?
Yeah.
God, that sounds awful. I have to cut that out.
Please tell me a funny story about killing a dog.
So, okay. So the movie I Am Legend, right? I think it came out. I think it came out like on DVD when I was pregnant. And you both have kids. You know what it's like, and you know that you're just not entirely yourself, and perhaps a little more emotional. At least I was. And I really, really, really love horror movies, and I really, really, really wanted to see I Am Legend. But I knew, I'm totally giving the spoiler in that, but I knew that the dog was going to die. I knew it. And I had, at the time, two dogs, and I loved them dearly. And so we sat down to watch I Am Legend one night, and literally as soon as the opening credits started and, like, the first glimpse of the dog, I started bawling, crying my eyes out. I had to leave. My husband watched the rest of the movie, and I think at some point I came back in. I sat outside of my back porch and cried over that dog for probably a good 30 minutes. So I will never kill a dog in my story.
Oh, bless her.
I don't want to do that to anyone else.
There are a few times when I can think of one specifically, and I don't even know if this is like a giveaway. It's somebody else's stuff. Leah, have you read the Dark Tower series?
I have, but I didn't read the last one.
Oh, because I know what you're going to say, and that is in the last book.
It's
Isn't
in
it?
The last book.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I don't.
Well, now you should probably know now.
Now you know what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
You're so far, damn it. But I'm just going to say there's a character that might be compared to a dog, and that dog might potentially go out, but
Aww.
He goes out like a hero. Like, it was okay
Aww,
with me
right.
because it was a proper send off. If you're gonna
okay.
do it, it has to be like
leave it to Stephen King.
Yeah, you do it the right way, and that was definitely the right way to do it.
We were just like we're keeping it from her, and then we're like, yeah, because how many animals are in that series, right?
Yeah.
It could have been any dog.
I know. It could be any. I'm sorry. I'm not keeping it from you, but at this point, meh.
That's all right. That's all right. I knew that bad things happened at the end of it because it's one of the few times I've seen my husband really angry about a book, and that's why I haven't read it yet because I'm like, I don't really want to be pissed off because I love the series so much. So I was like, I'm just going to steer clear. As you can see, I hide from things that I don't want to deal with.
I feel like I'm like the only person on the planet who liked the ending of that book.
But
you might not be, but I just
no,
like
I do.
Afraid to read it.
I'm the other person that likes it, so it's fine.
Oh, there's two of us.
I thought it was appropriate. I thought it was good. I felt like it was the right thing to have happen. To me, it was good. Anyway, was it hard to kill your character? I went so far away from that. Okay.
It's probably my fault. It was, like, I think I spent a couple days kind of moping as I was writing those scenes and just being kind of a little blah, but it had to happen. I felt like I had written myself into this corner where it had to happen. I didn't see a way for however many of the characters to continue on in the story because they had to go. Otherwise, bad things would have happened. So it was bad, but I survived.
Good.
Book three, all bets are off, by the way, other than the dog. I have no idea who lives in that.
Ooh.
It's ominous.
That is ominous.
Yes. I think it's going to be ugly.
Because, again, without giving spoilers, there's something that happens towards the end of book two that I was really surprised by.
Well, now I want to know what surprised you.
One of the relationships.
Yeah, code. Oh. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, actually, I don't know, because there's a few relationships that change, but I think you know which one I mean.
It's one of two, right?
Yeah.
So, but they both involve the same chick. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm confused. One of the things that I think is the most interesting about these books, and perhaps this is present in other like current zombie fiction, but I don't know because I don't watch The Walking Dead and I don't read the graphic novels and I don't really follow zombies other than your zombies.
Aww.
But seems to me that what is scary about these books is not really the zombies. The really horrifying stuff, the really, like, chilling things that stay with you are things that the humans do, the living, breathing humans. And it's like the zombie apocalypse is sort of the catalyst that pushes people either to be their best selves or their worst selves. And I was wondering, was that something that you went into? Like, is that a theme that you did, like, you wrote on purpose? Or did it just sort of happen as you were writing it that it ended up that actually the people are so much worse than the monsters could ever be?
Yes. To both. Because at first it was unintentional, right? So, you know, like, it was my first book I'm writing, and suddenly there are zombies, and zombies are bad and scary, but then, like, I got way more into the people. And,
yeah,
like you're saying, like, I got way more into developing this human bad guy. Because, like, zombies, there's so many zombie things in the world, but really, like, zombies aren't that scary. What's scary about them is just, you know, the reproduction. Like, the first, you know, 20 minutes of World War Z, when there's just, you know, it starts with one, and then suddenly they're everywhere. That's scary. But then once that slows, they're pretty easy to deal with. You just shoot them in the head or, you know, beat them about the face, and you're probably pretty okay, unless if you run into a swarm of them. Yeah, I know my zombies. But, like, really, it's any sort of end-of-the-world scenario that's really going to push people to either be, as, like you said, as good as they can be or as bad as they can be. And for me, that's been really freeing, because I've always been curious about the worst that people can be. And it literally stems from a lifetime spent reading about, you know, all the bad parts of human history. Like, I'm a Holocaust person. Like, I study it for some reason because I'm weird. And I always have, like, since I was 13 years old. So, you know, I have these images that are kind of always floating around in my head of really the worst people can be. Like, I think I saw Schindler's List when I was only, like, maybe 14 or 15. I don't know, maybe I was a little bit older, but it sort of just burned itself into my eyeballs. And so I have these images of people torturing other people and being really terrible and doing these horrible things. And so I think that's what's always come out once I've actually started to write. And so now it's very conscious. Now I'm curious. Now I'm like, well, if I push them in this way, what are they going to do? If I tweak this scenario a little bit, will they, you know, go a good way or will they go a bad way? Because to me, that's what's interesting. You know, who cares if they're zombies? They're the air. You just kill them. But what are the people going to do at the end of the world when everything's been taken away from them? You know, how will they react? That's what I'm totally interested in.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think one of the themes that I saw in book two was there are a couple people that have to make some changes or entertain ideas that don't have a clear right or wrong. And it's not possible to tell, like, I think even for the characters themselves, if what they're doing makes them the hero or the villain.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you approach writing something like that? Because you're writing it from their point of view, so.
I had fun with it, honestly. It was about halfway through the book, and I hadn't put in there's this running concept of they made a pact,
right.
The people who survived New Orleans. They made a pact not to kill the living anymore. And I hadn't put that in yet. Like, I hadn't even thought of that yet. But then I introduced, you know, some bad guys, and they were doing some pretty heinous stuff. And, you know, I was like, well, why wouldn't they just kill them at this point? They're really monstrous people. I mean, they're really terrible. Why wouldn't Jenna just shoot this guy in the head at this point? But then I was thinking about it, and I was thinking back to, in book one, a scene where Michael, her boyfriend, accidentally on purpose killed a man because he thought he was doing something bad. And I just remember Jenna completely freaking out and, you know, not being okay with that, because how could you be okay with somebody just killing somebody right there in front of you? And then at the end of book one, when one of the bad guys gets killed in this really brutal way, and, like, you just see the man who killed him just collapse in on himself, of course they made this pact, you know, not to kill living people because it's just destroyed them before in so many ways. It came up, you know, I thought of it that, you know, there's a reason why they're not killing these people. And so in my head, there was always this pact, right? And so I had all these terrible things happen and, you know, they just wouldn't kill them. And then again, it always goes back to beta readers and the people who read your book first. And my oldest brother read it and he was like, what are you doing? Why didn't they just kill him? And I was like, oh, I need to actually put the pact in the book.
Yeah.
Now I understand. You don't know what's going on in my head. But then it was honestly so fun to just kind of mess with them and see how far I could push them before, you know, that had to go. That pact just had to not work in this world where they live because it just seemed impossible.
Well, and that is the thing, too, is I think, like, you sort of, as much as you're messing with the characters, you're kind of messing with the reader, too, right? Because you want to believe that, like, they can be the bigger people. When they can, like, mm-hmm. have this little utopia in this little pocket, right? But then throughout the book, as things keep happening, you're like, oh, for crying out loud, just kill the motherfuckers already. how much worse do these people need to be? Like, you know?
Yeah,
so,
I know.
So then you put the reader in a weird place, too.
Sorry.
But I think it works. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I finished the book like an hour before you got on the line. So
that's because I didn't send it. I'm impressed that you guys actually read it because I forgot to send it because I'm really smart. So, yeah, sorry about that.
I should have hassled you about it more. It's not your fault.
Yeah, we should have bothered you.
harassing you for copies of your book.
So
I guess
I guess this sort of goes with what I was saying before, but just now. I guess I'll start with a yes or no question and we'll go from there. Do you think Sam has PTSD? Is that what he's written? Yeah. Okay. And so did you go into this book? Did you do research on the disorder or did you just kind of roll with it and think about, like, just in general, how would a person feel if they were going through this, like, sudden shift?
I just thought about, honestly, what I think got to Sam even more than watching his best friend get killed. I think, to me, it was always the months on the road by himself. Because to me, that would be horrifying. If I didn't have somebody around me for that long and I was, like, trying to survive in the wilderness by myself, I would absolutely lose my shit completely. I can say that, right?
That's cool.
I can see that.
I would lose my mind completely. There would be no Leah left. And so I tried to think about how that would manifest itself. And to me, it was just like him just zoning out and like losing it. And I've read bits about PTSD, but probably not enough. So it was less thinking about disease in a clinical sense and more thinking about, God, what would happen if you're just sitting there and suddenly, like, you're just in another place and you've no idea what's going on actually around you. I think I read a book when I was young that really stuck with me, and I have no idea what book it was, but it was about a girl whose dad had PTSD. And it was before PTSD was even a thing, and, like, they were still calling it whatever they used to call it.
Right.
But I remember they would, like, he would have these
shell
visions.
Shock or something, right?
Yeah, whatever.
Shell shock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, and, like, he would just, you know, they would be in the middle of dinner and, you know, something would startle him and he would just go into this vision and, you know, it just was such this terrifying thing for this girl to experience. And so I kind of wanted to go that route and have them just have no idea what's going on with Sam and have him, you know, really not want to talk about it because he doesn't want to talk about these horrific experiences that happened to him in those months when he was, you know, on his own because who would want to talk about that? That sounds horrifying.
Yeah.
So.
I do think, like, when you get the little glimpses of what did happen while he was alone, I think some of it that makes it even more interesting as the reader, I guess, is that he'll be remembering this terrible thing that happened, but he won't really – you don't get the part where he gets out of it, like where he saves himself. And so it's almost like you're reading his like his recurring nightmare. Like he doesn't let himself think about how he overcame something. He's only thinking of the danger, like, which I guess, you know, if you're on your own for months and months and months, that you would, I guess, be like on high alert all the time.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, but that's a really good point. This is why I love, like, when other people read my stuff, because you guys see things that I don't. That's really cool. I hadn't thought about that.
Excuse me.
I wanted to make sure we asked, is this a planned trilogy or is this a series?
Trilogy.
Three.
I have to be done after this one.
Okay, so three is going to be it, huh?
Yeah, if, I mean, assuming I can do it, assuming I can wrap up all my ends and dot the I's and cross the T's and get it where I want to get it, I plan for it to be a trilogy, but I feel like a little overwhelmed by it right now.
So you just said, I have to be done after this one. Is that
contractually?
Yeah.
No, not at all. It's more me just wanting to move on and write other things. So I started with zombies because that wound up being where I was comfortable. But, like, since then, I've written more sci-fi and, you know, more interested in that stuff. And, oh, my God, now I have a historical fiction book, like, floating around in my head. So it's more just wanting to sort of put it to bed, wrap it up.
Sure.
And then, you know, just see what else I have in store for me, what other projects are out there. But I love this world, and I'm always sad to say goodbye to it.
Oh,
that's scary.
Because you said that you've been writing a little bit sci-fi, I want to take a second to plug something that I found out about that I think is awesome.
Yes, go.
We've talked on the show. Jessica has no idea what's going on, by the way. We've talked on the show before about, like, the weird attitude some people have about women in science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And in response to that, Lightspeed Magazine is doing a special issue titled Women Destroy Science Fiction. And
I love them.
Yeah, so they're taking, and I'll link it up, but they're taking submissions for this, and all you have to do is be a woman and write some science fiction, and that's the theme. Because it's just sort of like, oh, you want to see us destroy science fiction? We'll show you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really cool, and I love anything that's sort of tongue-in-cheek like that. So
I think it's fabulous. I heard about it. I heard about it, I think, yesterday, and I think I actually did a little happy dance because I was like, that is so cool of them to do. Because you're right. So many people are like, but chicks can't write sci-fi. But you did?
Yeah.
Hey, you did.
I did. I heard about it from Leah. And I was excited. And I did check, and the story that I have that sci-fi has already been rejected by them. But you know what? I'm going to edit it, and I'm going to send it back.
Yeah.
Is this the one I think it is?
Yeah, it's the one. It's the one. Everyone loves that story, but not except editors. Like, my friends think it's awesome.
Which is it?
Editors,
is it one for more?
Yeah, it is.
Because I remember you wrote one sci-fi for War, and it was like robots or something, and I loved it. If it's that story, then
it's that story. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, just edit it. Send it back.
It's an exciting little. I want it to have a home. But anyway,
that's a good one. It does.
Anyway. So I think when you're thinking about, like, what's the most horrific thing, right, that could happen in a zombie apocalypse, the zombie cows is pretty intense. Right? Like, it is. Like, because you think, like, a cow, like, they're the most docile things ever. And they just, like, have these big, like, sad eyes and, like, well, my cow, like, fat, whatever. Zombie cows, and then you're like, what? And then also, like, there is the, like, that you're not gonna go out and hunt for your food. You're not gonna.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like a lot of resources are gone. But then the other thing, and this happens some in book one, it happens some in book two, is when our protagonists have to encounter children that have been turned.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I had that on my list of things that we wanted to talk about. That's a little bit unnerving because kids are scary anyway.
They are, aren't they? Oh, my God.
They're terrifying. Guys, today I came home and I looked kind of in the space that would be behind my front door if my front door were open. My son has taken his Mr. Potato Head, and the potato part is just, you know, partless and sitting there. And then next to it, in order, like, his arms are there. And then next are his eyes. And then next are the ears. And, like, all the different parts are all just in order, but they're all just laid out in a straight line there. And it's creepy.
Oh, that's creepy.
Like, that's weird, and I don't understand why he did it, and I don't like it.
When my daughter was little, when she was, like, 2 or 3, she had all these coloring books, right? Because your kids have coloring books. And she started coloring all the eyes black or covering all the eyes with stickers. And so she would, like, color this, like, super cute, bright, happy picture, and then the eyes would be black or blotted out with stickers, and it was the creepiest thing I've ever seen.
That is really creepy.
Yeah. It was.
Now
she just likes to try to scare us.
Comes out with creepy stuff all the time, but I think there's two worse ones. When she was a baby, she used to laugh at, like, nothing, but always in the same, like, looking at the same two spots in the house.
That's creepy.
Right? And you're like, come on, kid. Like, it's not funny anymore. Just stop. Stop it. And then the other one was I had had a nightmare that the night before that my husband died. And his phone was dead because whatever, right? So he's at work. His phone is dead. I had this terrible nightmare. And my daughter looks at me. I haven't said anything to her, obviously. She's 3. She looks at me and she's like, is Daddy in the hospital? It's like, oh, my God. I don't know. Is he? I mean, I didn't say that to her, obviously, because that would have been terrible parenting. But it really freaked me out. I was like,
my God.
I have to call somebody. Like, yeah. Oh, it was so bad. I was like seconds away from calling the hospital on base and like asking if anything had happened when like he called from work and was like, hey, sorry, my phone's been dead.
And didn't you kind of want to punch him even though like he hadn't done anything wrong?
He had no idea what was going on, but I was like, you should have plug it in. What's the point of asking?
One morning, Sean had to go to work early, so he was already gone. I was still in the bed. Jonathan comes in, hops in the bed with me like they do, and he's like talking to me and this, and I'm still trying to sleep, and he says, Mom, there's someone under the bed. Every time I talk, they start to whisper.
Ooh.
And I just set both up. I said, shut up. To my poor 5-year-old child. He's like, what? I was like, don't ever say that again. I don't know what you're doing.
That's,
don't ever
that
say
is
that
really
again.
Scary. You know, so I swear to you, I've never, like, pushed her towards this or anything, but I'm terrified of dolls. Like, dolls freak me out like nothing else almost, except for clowns and spiders and a couple other things. But anyway, I don't like dolls. And ever since she was a baby, she's never been one of those little girls that, like, carries around a baby doll. She's instead carried around, like, a stuffed monkey or a bear, you know, which is great for me. But two days ago, somebody was talking about dolls or something around her, and she just looks at me. She goes, Mommy, dolls are scary. I was like, oh, my God, she knows. How does she know? She knows. They're terrible things.
She just inherently knows that dolls are scary.
She's a smart kid, I guess. Yeah, scary kids. Kids are scary. Kid zombies even scarier.
Right.
So, yeah, if you make them into zombies, I don't want anything to do with that.
It's so funny because this conversation was like the exact opposite of how I planned it. I was talking about how sad it was, and then we were just like, kids are fucking terrifying. Why do they even exist?
It's like they're not even people yet.
I know, they're so small.
We're worse, but yeah.
Never mind that we're all doting moms.
I know.
Oh, exactly.
Like, I think that's what makes it worse is that I, like, all three of us have children. We're like, they're terrible. They're just horrifying all the time. If they're not doing something disgusting, they're scary.
Exactly.
But of course we love them dearly.
Right.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And zombie children are like way more disgusting and way scarier, so it could always be worse.
That's true. Yeah. And I mean, the thing with zombie kids is they're going to happen in a zombie apocalypse. They're totally going to happen because the kids aren't going to be immune. And I just always have images of like scary children walking towards me. So that's, you know, where they came from. But I'm trying to make you sad.
That makes sense. Like, it makes perfect sense that seems like there'd be tons of them just because kids are slow. What are they going to, you know? They're definitely
going
to get caught by some zombies.
My thought would be that a lot of, like, the really small children would just get eaten, though. I've given this thought.
Well, that's true. That's true. Jesus. It is zombie infants. That's gross. But
yeah.
Well, that's in the remake of Dawn of the Dead, right? There's a zombie baby.
Yeah.
Yes. It was born.
But it was, like, yeah, but it was, like, a little over the top, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I feel like,
it was, like, green and had teeth that were sharp or something.
Yeah.
I like that movie. Don't get me
wrong. I do like
that movie. That's one of my
favorites. As far as remakes go, it's pretty good.
Yeah, but zombie baby silly.
And you know, Modern Family has...
I love that show.
Right? But when I first started watching it, because the guy who plays Phil is the guy... who has the yacht in the Dawn of the Dead remake.
Oh, my God. I never put that together.
Yeah. Well, because
okay,
he has
sorry,
that really.
Blew my mind.
Well, because he has that really, like, I don't know, like, really unique cadence and voice, the way he talks.
Yes.
So the first few times we watched Modern Family, like, I was just like, this is too weird. And I was like. That song by Richard Cheese would get stuck in my head, you know, when he covered Down with the Sickness for the movie.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, this is too weird. I mean, we love the show now, but it took me a while to, like, adjust. Because he plays, like, the polar opposite character.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. I'm wondering if Sean already told me that. Like, if he already knew this. And he told me, and I didn't pay close enough attention. And I'm going to feel bad
Ask
when
about
I tell
it.
Him later. Oh, well, it's fine.
So Sean Leonard has, like, a few zombie questions for you, just general zombie questions. So fast zombies or slow zombies?
Medium. Because, like, why would they be suddenly super fast, right? Their body is deteriorating. And super slow is kind of boring, so I prefer, like, sort of the medium ones. Like, not Shaun of the Dead, more Walking Dead.
Right. Because to me, well, because, like, the fast zombies aren't really zombies, are they? It's a,
yeah, they're
it's
more
like
just, like, scary monsters.
Yeah. Favorite zombie movie?
Okay, so honestly, Dawn of the Dead has always been up there for me. And World
the
War
original?
Z, which I... The one with Sarah Polly, the blonde girl, and, like, Ving Rhames.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That one, where they're in the mall. I love that one.
Yeah. No, I love it too.
And that one in World War Z, which I did not expect to like because I'm not a huge fan of the book. Sorry, next book. But the movie kind of blew me away with, you know, some minor issues. But, like, the first 20 minutes or so of that movie were so intense and so well done that it was just, like, amazing.
What's your least favorite zombie movie?
Well, I hadn't thought about that. I don't know. I kind of just really like, oh, okay, Zombie Strippers. Got it. That's
oh.
The thing. The real thing.
I have that movie. Well, okay, I inherited it. Is it better if I say that? Like, it moved in
have
with
it
me, but... But
we
yeah,
have it. Charles bought it as a joke, and it gets played every now and again when we need to laugh. But come on,
yeah.
I've not actually seen it. I just, like, right now I'm looking at it at the box, but
it's,
yeah.
It's, like, it's really bad. It's so, I mean, not that you would expect it to be good, and it is
right.
kind of cheap, which is good, but, like, it's just, it's really, really, really ridiculous. So if I had to pick one, that's it.
I'm going to ask you the irrelevant question, just because I think maybe you have an opinion on this. This is from my friend Rich Hoffman, who always purposely asks questions we can't use. But this one, I think maybe, you know, he's like, I'm still trying to understand why Hitchcock never won an Oscar for Best Director. And I was like, you know, we're talking horror. Why not talk about Hitchcock for a minute? So, yeah. Do you feel like that, like he should have got an Oscar at some point?
I feel like I would like to see the movies he was up against, but
true.
I had to take a
there you go.
Wild and crazy. Huh?
But no, that's a good point. Yeah, that you'd want to see what movies.
Yeah, so like, against. Right? Because I mean, he made some amazing movies, but if they were up against like some of the classics that you know are just amazingly divine or whatnot, but that being the case and not knowing, I'd say at that point in time, and you know, even now, I think there's probably still a stigma against movies that are designed to shock or scare, and that they can't really be, you know, works of art or Oscar worthy. Because I think even
true.
Now, movies that are scary or suspenseful, it's really rare to see one that's both successful, like box office wise, and you know, critically acclaimed. Like Silence of the Lambs is an example of one that was Oscar winning and really
yeah.
scary, but I can't think of all that many. So maybe
that's
that.
Exciting.
There's not.
Wow.
And I always, I read an interview with Wes Craven, and he was talking about how when he started doing slashers, his goal was to bring sort of like porn, but a mainstream porn. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, he wanted to bring the sex in. And so he didn't mean it to be a serious genre. So I always fall back on that. I'm like, I'm sorry, Wes Craven. I will never take you seriously because you
yeah.
did not try to be serious.
Yeah.
On the other hand, other people
I
can.
That. Yeah.
I think Hitchcock was
probably
making art. Trying. Yeah.
And
if he wasn't trying, that's amazing, right? What if he wasn't?
Yeah.
What if he was just phoning it in the whole time?
Oh, yeah.
You never know. I'm sure he was trying. He did some pretty cool stuff.
Oh, sure.
I'm just saying that if that was Hitchcock not trying, could you even imagine what Hitchcock
oh, my God, no.
Like,
we wouldn't be able to watch it. It would be so scary.
Yeah. So, Dino Parenti, I'm going to assume he's a long-time listener, first-time caller kind of situation here because it is the first question he's ever asked.
He kind of, hard time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So his question is, what do you think the future of zombie lit is? Is it still possible to be unique with it, or has it played itself out or reached an impasse? Do you see the future more along the lines of a mashup kind of thing? Or do you think there's still some new blood to be pumped into it?
That was a good question, and I saw it on Facebook, and I thought, that's a good question. So right now, the zombie market is so completely glutted. It's just full. It's just, I mean, it is basically the vampire market. You know, it's the new vampire market. And I would say that the only thing that I wouldn't want to see happen is sparkly zombies. But I think they kind of covered some of that with warm bodies.
Yeah, I was going to ask, did you see that? I meant to see that.
I want
never
to. Yeah, me too. But I think there's always going to be room for apocalypse stories. And that being the case, I think there's always going to be room for zombies. Because kind of like we talked about earlier, if it's your backdrop, then you are free to go wherever the heck you want with your story. You can focus on, you know, the romance between two people as they're surviving in the zombie world. Or you can focus on, like, something completely just crazy and have it still be zombies. I mean, in the past few years, we've seen, like, literary zombies, like Zone One. We've seen
not literary zombies. I think I have a book somewhere in my book room called, like, Married with Zombies, which is
I have satire.
Have you read them? I haven't read them yet. Okay,
there's
so is it
three.
Satire or is...
No, yes and no. It's like a... It's hard to explain. They're kind of good. They're not great.
Okay.
But they're kind of good.
I kind of like...
It's about a couple who is, like, on the brink of divorce, and the zombie apocalypse starts while they're on their, like, they're in the building where they go to marriage counseling, and they have to kill their marriage counselor. And then, I only read the first one. I didn't read the other two. There's, like, I picked up three at a used bookstore. It's, like, Married with Zombies, Eat, Slay, Love, and Flip This Zombie, I think. So it's about how, like, they repair their relationship while fucking shit up in the zombie apocalypse. There's some good moments. It's funny, but I don't know if it's a satire per se.
Okay. Yeah, but see, that's kind of along the same lines that you can put any story just about with zombies in the background, and it's something new. So yeah, I would say, like, if people want to continue writing about zombies, it is going to have to be mashups of some sort of, like, combining genres of seeing what happens.
I have a really great idea
for
zombies.
Tell me.
What?
I have a really great idea for a zombie thing. I'm building on the ideas of, like, Stephen Graham Jones. So I'm stealing a little. But zombies... I want to read about a necromancer really bad, because that's supposed to be where zombies come from. Somebody's controlling the dead. Like original zombies.
You're talking about,
you know,
like traditional, like
traditional.
Right.
Yeah. But you don't see anything about that because it's kind of lame, because it doesn't really make sense. But then Stephen Graham Jones came up with this idea about, and I'm trying to think about how zombies go from slow to fast, because it's like first generation is really slow, and then they feed on people, and it's like a second generation, and they have different, like they get faster. I don't remember exactly. It's been a while.
It's like evolution.
Yeah, there's like an evolution to it. So my idea is I want to start with the necromancer that actually raises dead people from the dead. Like you do, and then and then they feed, and then slowly through that process of evolution and phases or whatever, there comes a slightly smarter zombie who's able to not be controlled by the necromancer. I don't have more to that idea than that part.
Start,
and I haven't written any of it, but I think it's so exciting. Sorry, I don't know why I went off on that tangent.
Oh, it's a great idea.
Yeah, but I like it. I say write it. I'll help you write it. Go.
Will do. Okay.
That was weird. I don't know how to come back from that.
I'm sorry. I don't either.
Because we only have like 9 minutes left anyway.
And,
like,
and
how do you even
ruining it?
How do you
where do we
that?
Go
you
here?
Can't.
You can't. No, but it's a good idea, and I think you should do it. I agree with Leah. You should write it. Yeah.
I'll read it. I will read it for you. It'd be awesome.
It could be, you know, like you start out with like a historical thing interwoven with
do
you watch?
Voodoo.
Yeah. Do you watch American Horror Story? You know how they always have like a current storyline that's happening like right now in contemporary time. And then they have the story that happened in the past going on at the same time, interweaved. You could totally do that. I wish you could see the way that I'm motioning my hands, because it kind of looks like I'm doing like some kind of magic voodoo thing. I don't know.
I can hear it. I can hear
you guys. Like I just got a real time question for
no
Leah.
Way.
Hold on. Sean just messaged me through Facebook.
Hi, Sean.
How far away is Sean from you right now?
Yeah, is he, like, on here?
Well, he's in the next room. He's in the next room, so I don't bother him. Or he doesn't bother me. Whatever way you want to look at it.
Until he messages you.
So he's messaging me. And he wants to know if you've seen the trailer for Dead Snow 2 yet. And
no.
Have you seen Dead Snow? Have you seen Dead Snow?
No. Do I need to?
Leah.
Hold on, wait.
Leah, watch
Dead Snow. Okay, I'm pulling at my computer. I'm getting my computer.
It's about zombie Nazis.
What?
And it is,
my God, it's like my perfect world, except not.
It is spectacular. Like,
it's
I had never seen it. Sean showed it to me, like, early on, you know.
Oh, my God, I've heard of this.
He just raved about it. It is amazing. It's amazing.
You know,
so, okay.
Oh, yeah, I did hear about this, too.
One,
yeah,
go watch Dead Snow immediately,
okay.
And then go look at the trailer for Dead Snow 2, because you'll be thrilled and excited.
Okay.
I did hear about this, and is it German?
It is, so it's
German.
Subtitles. There's, well,
that's almost...
No, it's not. It's like Swedish or something, I think.
Oh.
Like it's
I'm
Dutch
just
or, I don't know, it's some random... You know, I don't know who these people are. I don't care. It doesn't matter. But they're not American. Did that sound terrible?
That sounded really bad.
Well, I meant for
it,
too.
I think it's from New Zealand.
Hold on.
Oh, no, it's not. No, I was reading. Why do they do that? Now on IMDb, when you start scrolling down, it's like people who like this also liked, and then it gives you the description of a different movie. Before you get to the description of the movie that you, like, actually cared about.
Oh. I don't know. Okay.
That's weird.
I don't
know. Nazi zombies. Okay, I'm in. I just sent an email to my husband saying we need to watch this.
You will not be sorry. You will.
Okay.
You will love us forever.
The tagline is, ein, zwei, die.
Is that not good enough?
That is good enough.
Really. It's one of the best zombie movies I've ever seen.
So I don't know
why.
Wait,
this other one. Wait, this other one, though. Wait, I'm looking at IMDb, too, and I'm on the same page as you, Renee, and are you looking at the thing for Black Sheep? An experiment in genetic engineering turns harmless sheep into bloodthirsty killers that terrorize.
I want to see that so bad. Back when I still had the DVD service of Netflix, now I just have streaming. But I used to have the DVD service, and that was next in my queue, and then I, like, kept forgetting to send a DVD back, and then we canceled the DVD portion. But I really want to see Black Sheep.
I'm enamored with it right now, because bloodthirsty killer sheep, how can you not be?
Right? I
that
would note
awesome.
That on the cover, not a single one of those sheep is black.
No,
they're all normal looking sheep.
He's howling. He's like howling.
He does. He is. Wait, there are 40 million
normal
sheep,
and I thought you said noble sheep, and I was.
They're very noble.
The
tagline for this one is: there are 40 million sheep in New Zealand, and they're pissed off.
Where are you seeing taglines? I can't find them, but they're fantastic. Oh, this is the best movie ever. But wait, if you scroll down again. Oh, it changed. Now it's Shaun of the Dead, which actually makes sense, but it was something else a minute ago, I swear.
Is it Dead Alive?
Yes. I've lost that.
Yeah.
Or Deep Blue? Oh, no, Dead Alive. That's right.
Yeah.
The young man's bitten by a Sumatran rat monkey. Nice.
What I like is how the rest of it is, like, phrased really weird, though. So. She gets sick and dies, at which time she comes back to life, killing and eating dogs, nurses, friends, and neighbors.
That sounds like something I would have written, like, back when I was first getting started, like, that really awkward sentence that you read later and you cringe, and you're like, oh, God, I wrote that, too.
At which time?
Yeah.
Anyway,
How did we get here?
I don't know.
Deal what's happening anymore.
That's Nazi zombies.
Nazi zombies. I'll go watch that. Probably not tonight, but I'll watch it, and then I'll let
I
you know.
I want to see it tonight. I don't know how I'm going to see it tonight.
You're all going to want to
send
a gift for recommending that. That's how good that is, so.
Excellent.
With the last 2 minutes, we have to talk about the book giveaway again that we're doing with J. Travis Grunden. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we are once again being brought to you by Mr. Bad Example. And you have, I think, 2 more weeks to go to the listeners group, which is going to be linked in the episode notes as usual. And you go there and you look for the thread that I posted. I'm Renee, that says book giveaway, and read the instructions. And the instructions are basically, hey, you come to us and you write us an entertaining story about your worst first date, your worst one night stand, or your worst breakup. And then J. Travis Grunden, Jessica, and I are going to read all of them, and we're going to come to a consensus between the three of us, and whoever has the best one is going to win a book. So there you go.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Yay!
And that's the show. Leah, thanks so much for coming back. I'm so glad I got to read the second one.
Yay!
Thank you so much
for having me.
Yeah, love these books. Love you.
Mm-hmm. Aw, love you guys too.
But yes, as always, we're going to link everything up in the episode notes, everything we talked about here, including I'm going to link up Dead Snow and Black Sheep in case you want to go see those movies. And both links, direct links to both of Leah's books, you can go and get caught up on those if you haven't already. And yeah, then we're going to play a song. And we'll see you guys next week. Who's on next week? I don't even know anymore.
Oh, you're actually looking.
J. Travis Grunden. It's J. Travis Grunden.
Oh, that makes sense, actually.
Yeah.
We've got it in that freaking contest.
All right. We'll be back next week with J. Travis Grunden.
Think of hope. Say what you want.